Alan Clarkson Weekly Review, Current Technology Analysis, Show Number 28, April 1st and 2nd, 2006, www.ourmedia.org/user/38467. This week's intro music is available on the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. The artist is Sapphire the Uppity Blues Women. Yep, their record label released a few hit tracks out onto PodSafe Music Network, and the track is called Don't You Tell Me. In this week's show, after last week's unexpected hiatus, we look at the changeable web and structured blogging. The buzz is French law for digital rights management, a legal case involving computer damage estimates, and for the Because You Can site, trash. So on to the show. The changeable web and structured blogging. In a previous edition of this podcast, we looked at microformats and their potential to affect the delivery of data across domain infrastructures, making data as accessible on the web as documents are today, so that instead of loading simply web pages, web documents, and having the ability to view source, users would be able, and browsers would be able, to load data and look at view data, for example, to see the underlying structure of a given data set. One substantive implementation of microformats is in structured blogging, a design for creating data stores out of text-based weblog data. Structured blogging is a format that promises much more than an aggregator or feed reader can do today. It offers the potential to embed machine-interpretable semantic data into standard blogging systems so that posts can be presented in one way for human readers and another way for data syndication engines. Structured blogging is a mechanism for adding semantic structure to plain blog posts, making the data consumable for purposes other than just reading. Some examples from the developer's website include using individual blogs as collective data entry points for the web with the data in online marketplaces, with the data in microformats collected, indexed, and made meaningful through syndication engines that provide new online marketplaces. The concept would allow each individual to have a single point of entry to the great database that would be the semantic web. One interface from which to make available collectible and reusable data. Whether that interface is a mobile phone, a web browser, a refrigerator, a web log, whatever. You publish an item for sale on your blog, for example, and it is automatically included in an online listing comparing prices and sent to potential buyers who have entered watch preferences for that item. Or employers with job openings and prospective employees may be able to link up through automated listing sites rather than through the cumbersome registration system provided by sites such as Monster.com. How does it work? Well, it's pretty straightforward, really. The developer's platform automatically adds semantic web information to blog posts. The semantic information, of course, has to be determined from a given ontology or semantic vocabulary, but the enhanced posting method is relatively transparent to users. The other formats of the blog, RSS, Atom, RDF, and so forth, are not affected by this additional information. Right now, the posting process for structured blogging is different from standard blog posting in that it requires filling out forms for each post that one commentator has compared to the forms used in word processing program Document Creation Wizards. The time may come, that writer continues, however, when blogging software automatically recognizes some information architecture and human language semantics, but that is really in the realm of artificial intelligence built into publishing tools, not the thrust of structured blogging. Structured blogging is a mechanism for incorporating semantic information into blog posts, sort of automatically. See the show notes for links to the developer's site and a few articles discussing the methods. The buzz is French law and digital rights management. On March 21st, the lower house of the French Parliament passed a piece of legislation aimed at opening up digital rights management systems for interoperability and compatibility, or a piece of legislation aimed at breaking Apple's and Microsoft's hold on legal digital music, depending on your point of view. Either way, the buzz this week over Digital Rights Management, or DRM, brought focus to the intersection of commerce and usability in creative intellectual property. If passed by the upper house of the French Parliament, the law would, in essence, force distributors of digital multimedia files to make their DRM schemes available to providers of playback systems, both hardware and software, so that media files encoded with one scheme could be decoded on any player. The law seems to encourage a more open system of encoding digital rights into media files. So open, some argue, that digital rights protection schemes would be rendered virtually useless. Proponents of the more open approach to DRM cite hypothetical examples of one or two companies dictating not only the digital form of music and video files, but also controlling the global marketplace of media across cultural and tax jurisdictions. Proponents of the current balkanized approach to DRM argue that the current systems allow the best schemes to be adopted in the marketplace, the best for protecting intellectual property concerns and providing superior quality to customers. As the debate continues in France, analysts are watching the trickle-down effects in other jurisdictions for navigating the difficult territory at the intersection of providing an economic rationale for continued creative pursuits and providing customers with choice. See the show notes for links to articles discussing the French debate and an article discussing the potential for similar legislation in Denmark. The legal case is State of North Carolina v. Johnston. This week's case, from the U.S. State of North Carolina, clarifies in part elements that should be included in a criminal prosecution for computer crimes, at least in that state. While the findings of the appellate court in the present case are limited to specific state law, the lessons from this prosecution bear heeding for future prosecutions in other jurisdictions and may also signal an increasing sophistication in defense of computer crime charges. The defendant, Johnston, was employed by a doctor's office to install billing software and enter patient data into that system. The arrangement worked well for a period of months until personal issues caused the defendant's work product to suffer. After several warnings, the work did not improve, and Johnston was dismissed from her job. She left the office, but immediately returned, sat at the computer she had been working from, worked quickly at the keyboard, and left with a box of diskettes. The doctor's initial investigation of the computer found that the billing software had been removed and the patient files deleted. The office spent considerable time and effort finding new billing software, recreating patient files from paper records, and reconstituting a billing system from those elements. At trial for felonious damage to computers, one particular and essential element of the alleged crime was omitted by the prosecution and by the judge's instructions to the jury: the financial extent, or damage, resulting from the defendant's actions. The appeals court found, after extensive legal reasoning not based on the details of the charges, that the omission of damage elements in the prosecution's presented case and the judge's instructions rendered the felony charge erroneous, and ordered a resentencing based instead on a misdemeanor charge of damage to computers under state law. The appeal is important for two reasons. First, it is the first case in North Carolina to lay out jury instructions for future computer crimes prosecutions in the state, making the error in future cases plain error. Second, it may serve as an important reminder to those prosecuting computer crimes cases to the fact that defense counsel and defendants are becoming much more savvy with regard to the statutory limitations of much computer law, and will present a case based squarely in the intricacies of those laws and their intersection with the intricacies of technology. See the show notes for a link to a PDF of the appellate finding. This week's Because You Can site is a history of trash. Well, who should know better about garbage and where it comes from than a company that carts it around? That's what I thought when I ran across BFI Salinas's website with a timeline of garbage history, as in when the things we throw away were invented. Some of the information is pretty fascinating trivia. See the show notes for a link to the timeline of garbage. Well, that's all for this week. Check back next week for another review. Remember that all the show notes are available at www.protopage.com/weeklyreview. And if you get a minute, leave a comment on the posting site. It'll be nice to hear from you. We'll go out now with Sapphire, the Uppity Blues Women from the PodSafe Music Network and the track Don't You Tell Me.
Well, I'm in charge when I drive. Honey, that's the way I feel.
Don't you tell me.
Just beg a little bit. You look awful cute down there.
Don't you tell me.